Hello and welcome to another all-new episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. As always, I am Tyler, joined by my co-host Matt. And today we start on kind of a bummer note here. Because Matt, it's simply just been a rough season for the A-10 so far. And one that came with a ton of expectations. I'll start it by saying this. I take back nothing about what I said. I still believe that I was right, that there was enough top-end talent in the conference this year for this to be a very good league. And the summary of this season so far is that a lot of talented teams have lost a lot of bad games.
Well, I think mostly a lot of talented teams just haven't won any big games. That's been the problem. What's the A-10 at? Like 6 Q1 wins through 6 weeks?
Well, we have that exact number, and I want to start this off with a big thank you to whoever the anonymous man is who runs the @PHIndependent Twitter account, who saved me a lot of research today with a very timely tweet. So far this season, the A-10 as a whole is 87-61 with 7 combined Q1 and Q2 wins. 7. For comparison, there were 15 last year. And at this time, we did not have a single team that was a clear tournament team in the conference.
Yeah, it's been a rough go. And I feel like usually we make it to at least the end of January before we start talking about, well, might not be the year for 3-Bids, but my goodness, what a bad week.
We've actually been here in December all 5 years of this show.
I feel like the COVID year, though, before SLU shut everything down in Richmond, like there was a glimmer of hope that year.
Yeah, I mean, that year we were struggling to find the third. What we didn't realize was that Richmond was actually coming to get it. But at the time, we also didn't realize that VCU was going to suffer a bunch of injuries and completely fall apart. So,
well, with this year happening, I mean, I will say it. In the preseason, I marked it down. I said this was not going to be a special year for the A-10. I thought it would be aggressively average, I think is the words I use. And this has been way worse than I was expecting. I thought we would at least have won possibly 2 slam dunk at large teams. And right now that looks pretty grim. I mean, maybe there's a few that we'll talk about that can go on a big run in conference play and shake things up, but we've had the net rankings for a couple weeks. They aren't getting any better. We're running out of chances for it to get any better. And after, I mean, this is our 5th year of doing this, it was hard for me to be that optimistic in the preseason that things would suddenly change. I've watched enough A-10 basketball and kept my head out of the sand long enough to ignore there are some huge problems in this conference and the downward trajectory that it's faced. You could say the last 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, and we're going to spend the majority of this episode trying to tackle 2 questions that really go hand in hand. Number one, most importantly, why does the A-10 continue to fall short of the preseason expectations? This is the 5th straight year that the conference favorite has just not gotten the job done in the non-conference. And like I said, there haven't been many teams that have come up to replace them there at the top. And then the second part of that, have we simply reached a point that the yearly expectations, this idea that there should be at least 2 bids, I come into every season assuming that 2 should be fully expected, even in a bad year, and that 3 should always be on the table. Is that expectation simply too high at this point? And we got the numbers. We'll dive into this here, but I don't know about you, but I really tried to focus my research on these last 5 years, including this season. And it's a little wonky because it includes the COVID year where most teams only played like 5 or 6 non-con games. I think St. Bonaventure, who won the conference that year, played 2.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a tough piece of data, but The reason I picked that cutoff is because 2017, 2018 was the last time that it felt like things went as well as they should have. That year, Dayton, Rhode Island, VCU all make the tournament. They were all preseason top four teams in the conference who had really good seasons. And ever since then, it feels like things have shifted, and we kind of actually hit a cutoff point there. Archie Miller left. Shaka Smart left. Dan Hurley left. Like the conference started to shift at that time. Phil Martelli left. And it's just a different place now.
Well, and that's a great cutoff point too, because going back, like, we didn't pick the three bid league name out of a hat. It was something that made sense at the time. Going into the fall of 2018, when we started this account, started this podcast, you had to go all the way back to the 06-07 season, the last time the Atlantic 10 didn't get at least three bids. And there were years of four, five, even six in there. So the fact that we're now almost certainly heading toward a fifth year of one or two bids, it's a clear cutoff point. And to me, what I look at, you're right about some great coaches leaving the conference. In our 5 years doing this, we have not seen a team make back-to-back NCAA tournaments. And this is coming off an era where Archie Miller built a program at Dayton. Shaka Smart and Will Wade built something at VCU. Danny Hurley went to two tournaments in a row at Rhode Island. For a while, St. Louis had things rolling in the early 2010s. We haven't had a run like that. And, you know, I think people always talk about how the bottom-end schools are holding the A-10 back, but I don't know how we can say that this year when it's the top teams or the teams that are supposed to have all the resources and are supposed to be in position to dominate a mid-major conference. Not one of them has built something special in the last 5 years over more than a 1 year period.
Yeah, and normally I correct the errors at the end of the show, but I do want to hit this real quick because as soon as I said it, I realized I had it slightly off. The year I was describing was 16-17. 17-18 was Hurley's final year at Rhode Island, where they made the tournament along with Bonaventure and Davidson. I flipped those 2 years in my head.
And
So
Davidson did
that, but
steal
that
a
still
bid
is,
too.
they stole a bid, but they also still finished in third,
They were a
went
good team,
13 and
though.
5 in conference. And had they not stolen the bid, would have been a one or a two seed in the NIT. So they were right there and basically just kind of got that last kick in the final moment. So I don't consider that to be all that outlandish.
No, and I think they were actually the highest rated A-10 KenPom team also, which, yeah, I mean, that was a great year for Davidson. And we even have had some bid thieves too. We've seen St. Louis stole a bid our first year doing this in 2019, Richmond last year, and then even winning a tournament game. So that's still something that can happen in the A-10. And it's not like in a league that's consistently so wide open, it's not like we need three at-large teams every year. It's pretty common for somebody to emerge that would normally be an NIT team and take that 12 seed in the NCAA tournament. So the problem is we haven't even had a year really. I guess with the exception of the COVID year, the one time we didn't have a bid thief because St. Bonaventure and VCU both were at-large quality. VCU, of course, didn't get to play, but that's been the problem, just having two teams with enough meat on their schedules where they have a legitimate case in March.
Yeah, and so we'll take it ahead to this year. And I really dove into the net rankings here because you can talk about the flaws in it all you want, but in the end, that's going to dictate the NCAA tournament more than anything else. And why do we roll the ball out on the court? To get teams in the tournament and for those teams to win games in the tournament. And for a mid-major conference, those are basically the two hallmarks of success. You can count NIT bids too. It's nice to have a bunch of quality teams make the postseason, but that's definitely a secondary thing. So, in the net rankings, these last 4 years, at this point, like right around Christmas, the 2018-19 season, I had to take the December 9th rankings because weirdly, the net data is just missing on the internet for the end of December. I don't know why it's not there, but that's what I had to go off of. And basically, in each of these years, the A10 has anywhere from 5 to 8 teams in the top 100 by the end of non-conference play. They got one or two hovering in the 90s, but they have at least four solidly in the top 75, with 1 to 2 teams in the top 50. This year, we have three in total, and the best one at the moment of this recording is UMass at 85.
And that's important because keep in mind, you need to be top 75 for a game to be quadrant one, and that's on the road. So right now in the A10, everyone's going to be playing 18 games. There is not a quad one win to be had. And that just makes it so difficult, especially where really besides St. Louis picking up a couple nice wins and UMass winning an MTE, like nobody really has made much of a statement in their non-conference schedule. So the opportunity is just not going to be there in the conference season. And I'm sure at some point, things are going to work themselves out over a bigger sample. Somebody's going to get into the top 75, but that's not a sustainable thing where you just have one or two chances the whole year to get a noteworthy win. And that's the way we're heading.
Yeah, and look, there's seven teams right now between 142 and 173. And so if one of those teams just starts rattling off wins against the other ones, naturally they will begin to climb. But it has to be someone being dominant at this point. That's basically the position that the conference has left itself in. And you look at someone like Davidson, they're 173 right now. They play the number one team in the country in Purdue on Saturday. Almost a year ago was when they shocked Alabama and basically kick-started themselves on a path to their at-large bid. If they beat Purdue on Saturday, which would be one of the three or four biggest upsets in college basketball this year, although it's going to be a really good game and I look forward to watching it. I think Davidson's going to be really competitive in it. But even if they do, that literally might not be enough to get them in the top 100. It's not going to get them into the top 75. That's where everything is right now.
No, and Davidson isn't quite in the position that Dayton put themselves last year, but you look at Dayton, they overcame an awful start to beat Kansas. That shot their net way up and it jumped them right into the NIT. So at this point, I feel like Davidson has just dug too deep of a hole for themselves.
Yeah, and
And
let's give this other piece of perspective here. Dayton was 105 going into conference play last year. And if they beat LaSalle, they make the NCAA tournament. That's about, I went through all these years across the conferences. If you're a mid-major team, that is about the floor. There was a year Utah State was 102 and made it in. And every year we do see someone around 110, 115 make it in, but they're either in the SEC or the ACC. It was Arkansas last year. It was North Carolina a few years ago. I guess we can throw in the Big Ten. Michigan State did it 4 years ago. But those teams are just getting quad one, quad two games every single night in January and February.
well, and I think we're also missing the biggest part of this is that I don't feel like I'm breaking any news. Davidson's not beating Purdue. What have they done to show us that this year? And yeah, I mean, really, if you look at the top 100 or so, if we're saying that is a realistic, like there's still a remote possibility or more than remote that you can get into the tournament, we're talking about UMass, St. Louis, and Fordham. And I mean, when it comes to Fordham, they're inspiring. They're 11 and 1, but right now the net has 9 of their games in Q4. So even if they, like Fordham could hypothetically rack up 23, 24 wins, and that probably doesn't even get them close just
No,
due
it
to
doesn't.
the weakness of the A10 this year. So
So I think we've clearly established this is, in fact, a bad year. And our first year doing this, 2018, 2019, as it was happening, really felt like the worst year the A10 was going to have for a long, long, long time. It was certainly the worst that they had had in the 21st century. And I go back once again to our buddy at PH Independent. the comparison point, that year the conference went 74-68, 8 Q1 Q2 wins, 7 right now. There's a lot of good games this weekend. I think we're going to get an eighth, maybe a ninth, so that'll kick up. But this year, 34 Q3, Q4 losses. That year, there was only 33. And this is in a year where we continue to talk about how there is not that one or two teams really dragging everything down. There's not a horrible GW. There's not a horrible Fordham. I guess Rhode Island a little bit, but there's no one just racking up bad losses. The bad losses have spread themselves around, and they're just picking up on everybody's resume. Except, of course, St. Louis, UMass, and Fordham. That's why they're in the top 100.
I think so, and I think this year, too, has changed my perspective a little bit on the A-10, where the narrative has always been that it is those bottom teams dragging the conference down. Well, right now, like LaSalle, are they having a good season? No, but they're 5-5. They're hanging in there. George Washington beat South Carolina. That's their best win since we've been doing this. Duquesne is 7-3, having a nice year. Fordham, way better than they've ever been recently. And I honestly do feel like out of the seasons we've been doing this, this might actually be the strongest bottom of the conference. Like, we're going to have one or two fairly decent pillow fighters this year, and that's something that has very rarely happened in the A-10. I feel like, to me, this week illustrated the big picture problem of the A-10 better than anything could have. We had St. Louis go 0-2, including an embarrassment at the hands of Rick Pitino at Iona. Dayton takes their worst loss in the last 8 years by losing to Virginia Tech by 28. And then VCU gets the epitome of brutality against Jacksonville. That's three teams that the A-10 relies on to strengthen the conference. Those are the three teams that everybody had as NCAA tournament contenders. And that's three teams that simply have been good, but simply not good enough the last 5 years. And I think that's where the problem starts for me. And this year, with the bottom of the conference playing a little bit better, it's just opened my eyes that the major programs of the A-10 haven't pulled their weight.
And you went towards my last point in terms of this year. And we'll come back. We'll do a little bit of airing of the grievances at the end of this episode, where we complain about some of the specific things happening on the court. But in the context of this larger discussion, what's going wrong this year? You hit it right on the head with VCU and St. Louis this week. The biggest problem this season to me is that teams are not bouncing back from tough losses. There's just been too many instances of the bad back-to-backs. St. Louis gets run off the court by Iona, turns around. They have a great chance to get a good win over Boise State. They score 52 points and lose. VCU loses a hard game against Temple and then drops one at home to Jacksonville. Duquesne plays badly for 5 to 8 minutes against Marshall and barely loses that game, then comes out and looks listless against New Mexico State. And we can just keep, we can go back and find plenty more examples.
Well, we had three teams go 0-3.
Yeah, it's Loyola in Myrtle Beach.
Right.
Where they were just racking up these bad games over and over again. One of the biggest ones to me is Davidson, who has played really well this year, except for a week where they lose a weird rivalry game to Charlotte. And I was willing to throw it away because the Davidson-Charlotte games are always kind of funky. And
yeah, they just always lose.
Yeah. But then they come back the next game and get taken to the woodshed by Delaware. And that's just what keeps happening over and over and over again. And it reached a point that I was mentally prepared for another one, which is UMass losing the flagship status at home to Lowell. And then I just figured, okay, this is the theme of the A-10. They're going to lose to Hofstra now. And they didn't. They came out and played a great second half against one of the two best teams in the CAA. So maybe UMass broke that curse, but Yeah, it just go back and look, pick any random team's schedule. Everyone has played two or three games in a row where they've just been awful in all of them.
How about
It's
George
not one.
Mason?
George Mason and
They might
Virgin
have the worst
Islands.
one of them all.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, no one has the bad loss where they immediately bounced back. Unless, I guess, if you want to count Dayton getting killed by Virginia Tech and then pounding UNC Asheville. It's about the only one.
Yeah. And I'm not really going to take a whole lot of pride in that. So it has been tough, and that makes it tough for the conference to get quality wins overall. But yeah, there just hasn't been that much to celebrate. And I think part of it too, when we've seen these inconsistencies across the conference, where St. Louis just played two awful games this week, and like VCU going on losing streaks, Davidson, like in a year like this to get an at-large bid. Like, as it always comes down to, it's separation at the top of the conference, where if everybody cannibalizes each other, then that's how you get a bunch of teams to the NIT. In a year like this, though, I haven't seen any team that's consistent enough that I can just say, like, yeah, they have the potential, if everything goes right, to dominate the league and go 16-2. And so I feel like that's something we, if it's even worth talking about at this point, is there anybody that can do that and win the conference outright by two or three games? I would say absolutely not, but maybe we still see that with a St. Louis or UMass, and that's enough to put them in the picture at the beginning of March.
I think there's still two that can, and it's the same two it's always been. Look, St. Louis has still played the best of anyone in this conference. Every time I watch them, I don't feel like I'm seeing anything that they're doing well that's unsustainable. The best parts of their game are Collins just dominating all around, Jimerson getting hot, just kind of random little things around the court from Pickett and Thatch. Like, everything they're doing well is going to continue to happen. And there's a lot that can still go right. Okoro can get back to the guy he was at the end of last season. Perkins could start to play like an all-conference guy again. Maybe Sincere Parker, who's starting to get more minutes, gets going. So yeah, St. Louis definitely still could.
So
I'm not picking it right now, but it definitely could still happen.
let me give you my rebuttal for St. Louis real quick, though. And this goes back to the bigger picture, I think, of why the A-10 hasn't been good the last 5 years. St. Louis is that perfect example of a team that's been good but not great over that period of time. And like I said in the preseason, they still have not finished above fourth place since 2014. Do you really think they're going to avoid
That's actually gonna end this year, but
it? Maybe. How confident are you, though, with how wide
actually
open things
very.
are? I think there's a, I mean, they are still the favorite to win the league, although UMass is making a strong case and they are higher in the net right now. But do you really
I
think St.
actually don't
Louis?
even think I'd pick St. Louis to win it right now, but to me, they are a lock to finish top four. And that is the only lock that I will give to any team in any spot in the standings right now
I'm still
because
not
of
gonna.
Collins.
I think, I mean, he's outstanding, of course, but St. Louis, just the last 5 years, they haven't shown me they can be consistent enough to dominate a conference. Like, I think there's a really strong case. They will win between 12 and 14 conference games. I do not see them winning 15 or 16. They
And
just
hey,
haven't, they haven't put it together over a solid full season
well, look,
ever.
we're scrounging for the idea of can it still happen? Because part two in the can it
And I'm
still
telling you,
happen
no, it
is, by
can't.
the way, Dayton actually still could. It's like a
Well,
1 to 2% chance, actually possibly lower, but it's not zero.
I think if there's a second team that can do it, it's the Minutemen. I think we're disrespecting them. Like, other than beating UNC Asheville by 20, what has Dayton done to
There's
deserve
a
that? This is the roast
talent
episode.
still
We're
there.
the grievances have already started, and I'm
Well, and
very close to throwing in the towel on
I guess
Dayton.
the UMass pathway involves Gapare really just continuing to take off in these next few weeks. Because the way that they're currently structured and the way that they're distributing their minutes, I just don't think their ceiling's high enough. But if either Gapare or Luis just simply becomes a star as we go through the winter months, then I guess I still just don't see that ceiling from them. Or maybe Matt Cross, but if you tell me this continues to be a team where Fernandes is just without question their best player, that's not a team that's going to go 16-2 in what's still an above average conference. But if it's Fernandes is their number one and Gapare is a really close number two, maybe.
I just feel like at least with UMass, though, if you compare them against Dayton, like right now, UMass has 10 or 11 guys where you can put them on the court, and I will say, yeah, this guy can play in the A-10 and hold his own. Dayton has like six of those guys, maybe seven on a good day, and we still don't know if they're getting either of their guards back. So that I will say the Kobe Brea breakout against UNC Asheville, where he finally showed some life from the 3-point line. That could change everything if he gets back to where he was last year, but still,
It's
that's one good bench player Dayton has right now, and that's about it.
yeah, I wasn't gonna yammer on the Dayton stuff today, but that is the one reason why I'm starting to feel optimistic again. Like Brea, it was just so clear that he was hurt. And we saw him up close in the UNLV game when he came back, and he was literally like afraid to move. He just stood in the corner the whole time. And I'm glad I got to see him in person this weekend because he looked like old Kobe Brea again. He was fluid. He was aggressive. And I think we can. I'm going to just go out and say, I think we can just throw out what we saw from him up until that UNC Asheville game. I just don't think he was himself. I think we're going to start to see old Kobe Brea right now, starting with that Wyoming game.
Well, that would be a game changer because Dayton finally has shot the ball well from three. At least they did against UNC Asheville and then Southeast Louisiana. We don't need to talk about what happened against Virginia Tech, but that could be a big game changer. I'm still just overall very concerned about the depth, very concerned about the guard play in general, because they really do only have two guards and they only play one at a time a lot of the game, so I'm worried about how that's going to hold up in conference play. But they inspired confidence. That was their best game of the season over the weekend.
Yeah, and I'll worry a little bit more about this when we do our conference play preview. We still got another week of games to soak in here. I guess
Oh,
two, I guess a
finals
week and a
week, though.
half.
It's quiet. It's sleepy around the A-10 this week.
Saturday is insane.
That will,
It's the
yeah.
best day of non-con, and then we got a decent week after, and then we got GW and Diamond Head, so we still
Ooh.
got plenty to watch. But I want to take it back to the second question I kind of posed. Which is, are the expectations just too high for the A10 at this point? Is the 2015 through 2018 A10 just gone now? And went back, dove into the net. To me, I've always compared the A10 to the Mountain West, American, West Coast, and until realignment kind of gutted them, the Missouri Valley was in a similar spot to those conferences. It has clearly fallen off since then. But these last 4 years, the big thing that you see year after year, the A10 getting those 5 to 8 teams in the top 100 is basically in line with both the Mountain West and the American. It's a little bit better than the West Coast, who has notoriously always had a pretty bad middle.
They also only have 10 teams, right?
Yeah.
Where everyone else has
Well, I think they
14.
might have 11 now,
Yeah.
but the big thing is that consistently year in, year out, these conferences always have at least one team in the top 50 coming out of December, if not 2 to 3. The WCC had four of them last year. The Mountain West had three, and then eventually, and then Fresno State right below it. Fresno State dropped off, but they ended up getting four teams in the tournament. And even in the 2019-2020 amazing Dayton season, they were the fourth highest ranked team coming out of the non-con across those three conferences. The A10 had the lowest of the top ranked teams among those four. And by the way, Dayton was 17 at that time, but San Diego State was one, Gonzaga was ahead of them, and Houston was ahead of them. And that's the A10's biggest problem is they continued to match these conferences in depth. But on the top line, where you have to have those NCAA tournament teams, they're not matching up. Now, one of the questions I pose to myself is, did the A-10 just become the Missouri Valley with better PR? It's not that bad. The Missouri Valley was consistently putting one team in the top 50 with that A-10 squad. A lot of the years it was Loyola, but Drake snuck up there. There was a Northern Iowa year. And then you would go down and they'd be lucky to have one more in the top 100. So there is a clear divide still between the A-10 before you get down to the Missouri Valley to Conference USA. Not counting this year where Conference USA might actually be awesome. But they're clearly above the rest of them. But I think we might have to retire the Power 8 name, because right now there is a fairly thick line between those next three, the 7 through 9 of the American, the West Coast, and the Mountain West. And the A-10 has just clearly been 10 for a half a decade.
Yeah, we're like in the, I think the A-10, if we're being honest, it's the Power 12, and throw us in with the MVC and Conference
USA. I think
USA.
It's still probably the Power 10. I don't respect those next two enough.
We're behind Conference USA in the net, aren't we? Or is it the MVC?
It's Conference USA. The Missouri Valley is having a year that is so bad that it makes them jealous of what's going on at the A-10 right now. They're 16th in the net overall.
Yeah, how you guys feeling about all that Loyola trash talk? I know they had some words when their Amherst jumped ship, but not so funny now. But seriously, I do think you make a good point that there have not been a whole lot of elite level teams in the A-10. Really, it's just been Dayton in that magical 2020 season. And then in 2021, that COVID year, St. Louis went on a tear, and I think they started 7 or 8-0.
They were 13th in the net coming out of non-con.
Yeah, so they had their season interrupted and then didn't come back as strong after resuming play. But I think another big problem, and for this, I'm not talking about this year, and I'm not talking about 2019, because those were the really bad years with just a couple top 100 teams. But in 20, 21, and 22, those were the years we'd have consistently 6, 7, or 8 top 100 teams, which is usually, I think, enough to get you close to three bids. But each time in 20 and 21 and 22, it's just been the conference cannibalizing itself, where we end up with 4 NIT teams and just a whole lot of like above average, but no one that's really great. And then 2020 was also just such a unique situation where if Dayton just lays down a couple times and goes 16-2, and maybe like if Jalen Crutcher doesn't make a buzzer beater, and if they lose to Richmond or something, or lose to Rhode Island once.
Well, Richmond was getting in, but
yeah, they were a bad example. But if they lose to St. Louis once, or if they lose to Rhode Island once and go 16-2, that's a three bid league also. But when you just have one team dominate the conference, and then after that, it's all stacked up together, it makes for a pretty strong overall conference, but tough to get multiple teams with an at-large bid.
Hey, look, you can make an excuse for any one of the last 4 years. Like, COVID made things weird that season. Last year, there was too much cannibalization. 2019 was just a weird blip down year. They're weak excuses. 2020, it's kind of real, because VCU and Rhode Island were the second and third best teams in the conference that year.
Mm-hmm.
And VCU's offense just absolutely cratered. And then Evans got hurt and they never got it back. And it's been almost 3 years now, and I'm still baffled by some of the things Mike Rhodes did in the month of January that year. Like, it's the one thing that still just hangs in my mind when I try to evaluate Mike Rhodes as a coach. That VCU team got weird. They couldn't figure out the injury problems. The offense fell apart. Rhode Island started slipping in January, but they righted the ship and they were headed back to the tournament till Langevin got hurt. And mm-hmm. He was way too important to their defense. And when they lost him, they just completely went to hell. And so it was kind of, there was some weird fluky stuff to that season, but when that's the 1 year out of 4, you can't really use that as your excuse for, oh, why is the A-10 struggling?
I think we're out of excuses, especially this year. I mean, I guess if you want to make an excuse this year, you could say, oh, there's like six new coaches and a whole bunch of teams going through transitions, but I
Yeah, but
should
some
Rhode
of those coaches, like LaSalle's better because they have a new coach.
and should Rhode Island really be this bad?
No.
I mean, that's kind of ridiculous. So, and I mean, the three teams that, again, that were supposed to be good, they've all had their coaches for a while. So it's not like that affected. That's not why VCU and Dayton and St. Louis have been disappointing.
I mean, there really is no excuse for this year. It's that teams are losing too many bad back-to-backs, and players that we expected to be really good players on good teams. And you can just go look at the stats for Dayton, St. Louis, VCU, George Mason, all of these teams. You're going to find at least one veteran guy who was expected to be somewhere around the all-conference discussion who's just simply played worse this year than they did last season. And that happens. That's what happens with college kids. But there's just too many this year. Every year we go back, and there's one or two people who were on preseason first team all conference who don't make the all conference team. This year it might be like four or five. Now, I actually still don't think that's going to happen because you look at like Daron Holmes, didn't play at an all conference level in November. He's starting to show signs of being back, and I'm not going to bet against him right now. Josh Aduro was really bad in November. He's played really well in any of the last few games where he didn't get into foul trouble. So we'll see the guys come back, but it's been too many good veteran players just have not played well.
Yeah, I agree. But overall, I mean, this is getting sad real quick. I feel like we do need to move on and talk about some of the bright spots of the league, some
Ooh.
of the guys that are playing well.
So I actually want to end with one last comment here before we go into go into
Okay.
our little palate cleanser. The one thing that I would have loved to really tackle in this episode is why does it feel like expectations are constantly being missed? And more importantly, why does the favorite always fall apart every year? And I consulted with our good pal Nick Lorenzen over at Mid-Major Madness and asked him, does this happen in anywhere else? And he said, no, this is a uniquely A10 problem that the favorite always fails to come through in the way they expect. Every other conference, like you look at the Mountain West, San Diego State's not having a great year. They were the preseason favorite there. They're still sitting at 50 in the net. They're still going to make the NCAA tournament. Like, this is a uniquely A10 problem. And this is not something we're going to be able to try to get an answer to in December. There's still too many games to watch, too much to focus on. This summer, I think we need to make it our project to try to answer this question, to figure out why does the non-con continue to disappoint us? And that'll help us for our preseason predictions next year. But I invite anyone who's listening to this, if you have a good explanation or even just a wild theory, that's not just, oh, so and so coach sucks, and that's why their team always disappoints in the non-conference. Please tag us in a tweet at 3BidLeaguePod. I'd love to start a discussion. If someone like Curry Hicks Sage, one of the more intelligent members of A10 Twitter, wants to start a conversation about some idea he has for this, I'd love to get that sparked. If it's someone who's super smart and has something critical to say that's still helpful and doesn't want to put their name to it, I invite them to send us a DM or even just shoot us an email, 3bidleague@gmail.com. But this is a discussion I think we need to start to have in this offseason to try to figure out why it's December every year and we have to do an episode, which we didn't do this year because it's actually been that bad. We have to do an episode where we try to calm everybody down and convince them it's not as bad as it seems.
Yeah, if someone has the answer, let us know because, I mean, we've pretty clearly missed on it every year. And the one thing I'll say to that too, like what it happened with Dayton being ranked in the top 25 this year, St. Bonaventure last year. It's just outside of Dayton going undefeated. It's been so long since we've had like a special season from someone. I really think you have to go back to like 2014 when St. Louis finished the year in the top 10 in the country, or at least they were there in February. And I feel like every year the preseason favorite gets elevated so high in the conference where people are like, yeah, this is like you go on CBS Sports and somebody's on there writing, like, this is my final four darling mid-major. And I feel like part of that too, it is the media's fault where they hype up these mid-majors because fans over the summer, when they're starting to think about college basketball, they want to root for the little guy. And it's the same with us. Like, it's more fun to talk about the dreams of these teams being really good. And, you know, outside of Dayton, that one season, it just hasn't ever happened.
Yep. And the two specific questions that I do really want to figure out the answer to. And if there is anyone who understands coaching far better than us that wants to give us these answers, I want to know how it is that Anthony Grant still hasn't won a road non-con game at Dayton, and how Bonaventure loses to a Metro team every single year, even when they're really good. Because these two are just like the great all-time mysteries that will just continue to baffle us
Well,
forever.
Bonaventure's just doing that in preparation of joining the Metro someday. That's where they're headed. Oh boy.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll end
Oh.
that part on this. We're going to go for a little palate cleanser here
Yeah, let's
because
do that.
that was probably the most pessimistic section of this pod that we have had in 5 years. So I wanted to kind of hit on, and we both took this different ways, but three things that we're excited about right now that aren't getting the proper coverage. So I'll let you fire out your number one. I think you went for more of a player angle. I went a little bit more general.
I did. Mine are very player specific. And really, I was looking for some unheralded guys. I was looking for players that we really have not mentioned hardly at all this year when I was attacking this. And the first one, I actually have two players on the same team. And it's a team we have mentioned a lot, UMass, that has so many different guys getting minutes. But I feel like we've already hyped up RJ Lewis quite a bit. And he is getting a ton of shots up. He's important to the Minutemen, but I wanted to take a little bit more of a look at their two other key freshmen, Tafara Gapare, who we already mentioned a little bit, is a potential ceiling raiser, but looking at what he's done, it's been limited minutes, but his block rate and steal rate are both around 5%, which is pretty crazy for defensive metrics. We'll see how that evens out once he starts playing more, but he's also shooting 50% from three and is coming off a 13-point performance against Hofstra. So, someone that really was not a factor in Myrtle Beach and took a while to get going this year, but he's been important. And then the other one, Keon Thompson, who's been getting a lot of minutes at point guard with Noah Fernandes dealing with an ankle sprain. He had a near triple nickel, 8 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists against Hofstra, and also had 13 against Albany last week. So, another freshman that's starting to get a lot more of an opportunity. And especially with Fernandes being out, it's so encouraging that UMass was still able to beat a pretty good team. And I think that's a big part of that is these freshmen.
Yeah, and when you said UMass, I actually thought you were going to go to DeAndre Dominguez, who's just been a
He's been good
really,
too.
really nice role player for them. So I'll give him a quick shout out as well. But I'll go into my first one. I actually also have two guys together on a team that has played really well. And I wanted to go out and praise, I guess, three guys, the Fordham front court. Darius Quisenberry has gotten most of the ink about this Rams team so far, and deservedly so. He's clearly their best player. He continues to carry the backcourt offensively and is a very serious first-team all-conference contender. But the reason why I'm buying into Fordham despite the bad schedule so far is because their front court is just about as good as last year as a collective. And that collective last season included the best season from a Ram in the 21st century from Chuba Ohans. But they're just better all around now. And Khalid Moore, for anyone who has not been watching Fordham, he's an all-conference level guy. He is just destroying these bad teams now. He's coming off of a 25-point outing against Central Connecticut State on 8 shot attempts. He had a 23-10 in their biggest game of the year against Tulane. He's had at least 7 rebounds in 4 of his last 5 games. He's a solid defender. He's not quite Ohams on that end, but he's changed the level of their offense. They're a better offensive team because Quisenberry has him next to him this year. But around him, Amdu Simbila, who last year, admittedly, I kind of didn't understand what he brought to that team. Like, he was tough and he kind of rebounded. He didn't really do that much else. He's a way better defender. He's picking up a lot of the Oham slack on the defensive end, allowing Moore to kind of play a little bit more of the role that Simbila himself had last year. And he's a vicious offensive rebounder. He's great at attacking the rim. He's just a whole notch better than last season. And then everybody watch out, because their breakout man has finally gotten going. The Ukrainian, Rostislav Nowitzki, who's now up to 7.5 points a game, 5 rebounds a game this season. He has played extremely well in December, starting with 14-9 again in that huge Tulane game. He came back 3 days later, had a career-high 19 points against Wagner. He's mostly an inside guy, but he can space the floor a little bit. He is actually disappointingly only attempted 4 threes this year. I'd like to see him at least take 1 or 2 a game just to keep the defense honest. But he is actually one of the best backup bigs in this league right now. Fordham has a really good front court rotation at this point. And honestly, overall, the Rams, their ceiling's not quite the same level as it was defensively last year without Navarro and Ohams. But overall, like, I watched this team and they basically seem to be about as good as they were last year. Like, despite the schedule, I think this is at least a 500 team in conference play.
It's certainly looking that way, and you actually ended up taking one of mine because I wanted to talk about Nowitzki too. And it's crazy. He came in with a little bit of buzz last year, but didn't really make a big impact. He's shooting 73% from the field right now, which is a big reason why Fordham's actually been able to score more points this year and just overall be a more efficient team. But I specifically remember from our final preseason episode, one of your over-unders was if we would get more than, or over under 1.5 players in the top 50 of national block rate. Right now, Fordham has 2. Both Nowitzki and Simbila are blocking tons of shots for the Rams, which has kept their defense afloat. Overall, yeah, I mean, the front, Quisenberry gets all the respect as he should, but this is a really solid front court. So that's
people are going to realize very quickly in January how good Khalid Moore is.
And I think if there's one thing too that I will admit I was dead wrong on over the summer, I thought Fordham's front court was going to be a disaster. I thought losing Ohams was going to be way too much and that they would suffer, but as a collective, they're actually somehow better in that area, which is pretty ridiculous. But another freshman I wanted to bring up, another European big man, actually, that I don't think we've talked enough about, but he started to play well the last couple games. That's Rokas Josias from LaSalle, who caught him against Drexel, just dominating inside in the first half. And overall, he's actually perfect 3-for-3 from deep this year, really starting to take a lot of the center minutes from Mamadou Doucouré. And the last 5 games, he's shooting 17-for-29 from the field, also blocking more than a shot per game. And we got a little bit of hype from him over the summer. I think Rothstein had him in LaSalle's projected starting 5, and it's starting to look that way where he's getting more and more minutes. I could definitely see him ending up in the all-rookie conversation because, like, the Drames aren't really true centers. Doucouré hasn't gotten a ton of minutes. I think by the end of the year, he's going to be one of LaSalle's most important players.
Yeah, and admittedly, I've probably watched less LaSalle than anybody else. They just keep getting stuck at the same time as other really good games. So I'm relying on our pals over at the Gola Standard for my LaSalle analysis and coverage right now. And God, I think it's Richie more so than Dennis. They're both big on him, but Richie loves Rokas Josias. And I think those two see him as the next star of the Explorers. So that matches the nuggets of Rothstein hype that we're getting over the offseason. So I'll go to my number two. And it's fun that we've been talking about big men, because this isn't really a person or a team. It's just a thing. Last year, I had so much fun watching the Sultans of SWAT that we had all over this conference. It was the best shot blocking conference in college basketball. It was the single most fun thing about the A-10. And unfortunately, so many of those guys are gone now. Ashunahi's at Iowa State, Clifton Moore's at Providence. Like, we lost a whole bunch of those guys. We still have Daron Holmes. But now this has become a conference of really fun rebounders. And there's certain guys that when you just want a little random thrill, you got to keep your eye on them. And really four players specifically I want to shout out who all are thrilling in different ways. Tumani Kamara, who glides into the rim like he's peak Josh Smith going up for these rebounds. And then grabs the ball like he's trying to pop a hole in it with his bare hands. Like, Tumani Kamara is going might break a basketball this season. He just grabs the ball so viciously while he's in midair. And he's faded in and out throughout the season, but his rebounding has not shaken at all. I still believe the whole reason they lost to UNLV is because he wasn't there to keep the Rebels off the defensive glass in the second half. But he's up over 9 rebounds a game. He is just so fun to watch attacking the glass. Another guy, Austin Rotrov, who is becoming my favorite bench guy in the league, who basically just plays like he's a NFL left guard. About 98% of the time he's in the game. Like, he's just looking to just throw some bodies around, get in there, box guys out. He leads the nation in offensive rebounding rate, and it's all just brute force, power, and brutality from him. He's just trying to outmuscle every single person that comes in his way. Jalen Deloach over at VCU. I mentioned this in one of my columns a few weeks ago for Busting Brackets, but he has just some of the quickest hands you're ever going to see. Every time a rebound goes up in a scrum, you see a Deloach hand just coming in, tip it, tip, 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 trying to knock it over to his other guys. And by the way, they have another fun rebounder in Brandon Johns as well. And then Sam Menenga, who I don't even have anything specific that I enjoy watching with him, but he's just so technically sound. He has such a great instinct for the ball, and he deserves a shout out as a wonderful, fun rebounder too.
That's a good one, and you certainly went deep with that. I agree with all of them, though. Like, we don't have all of the same shot blockers that we've had, but watching some of these guys rebound, especially, I think, Kamara and Rotrov.
Kamara is getting really fun. Some of these.
Yeah.
He is, like, three a game that are just absurd.
I'll say this, too. Like, I think Daron Holmes got all the buzz for his shot blocking abilities and what he did last year, but if you had to pick an all-defensive team player from Dayton, I think it's got to be Kamara if you factor in his rebounding. And he's also a great shot blocker, too.
Yeah, probably slightly right now, although we saw the blocks start to come back from Holmes on Saturday, so.
Yeah, we did, and hopefully we keep getting that the rest of the year. But for my last nice unheralded guy, honorable mention here. We never say anything nice about Rhode Island, but I wanted to shout out Abdu Sam, who is quietly one of the few efficient players on such a disastrous offense. But I'm kind of excited to see where he goes, because Archie's been playing him a bunch. He's started almost every game, shooting around 55% from the field, and he's the best offensive rebounder on a team that's actually really good at that. So interested to see where he goes. But my last shout out here, we knew going into the season Richmond needed a three-point shooter. It's what held them back last year in the non-conference, where Their shooting percentages just dipped to what we were used to seeing under Chris Mooney. And this year he finally got his gunner from the transfer portal. Jason Roach shooting an electric 44% from three. And my favorite part about it is that he's only attempted 6 2-point shots this year. So he is a pure 3-point shooter. I think he's given a huge boost to Richmond offensively. And really, it's something they haven't had since Blake Francis a couple years ago, where someone that has that quick release from the perimeter that you always have to keep an eye on. And one of those players that can just get red hot in a huge hurry. So I think he's been one of the better under the radar transfers this year.
He's really fun. And I'm going to throw a little prediction on here because it just feels natural with the angst of this season. He's going to have like a 6 for 8 3-point shooting game in one of the Honda dealers or whoever the hell sponsors it now, Richmond City Classic.
Ooh.
One of those games, he is going to absolutely go off. And the VCU fans are not going to stop complaining about it for like 3 weeks.
Would
He's doing it to one of the more complainy fan bases. It'll either be VCU, St. Louis, Dayton, or Bonaventure. But there's a big Jason Roach game coming.
I think you're right, and I can't wait. I'm hoping I'm there for it to watch it that night.
All right, my third thing. I got a little bit of a buildup for this. There was one team that we were both in complete lockstep this offseason that we felt was completely overrated. We shorted them hard. They came out of the gate awful. We looked like geniuses. We cashed in on that short position. And I made sure to not go as far as to ever say that I thought they were a pillow fight team. No matter how terrible they looked in Myrtle Beach, I would not go there. And now, after we zagged everybody, I'm ready to start zigging again. This team was as low as 12th in one of the A10 Talk Power rankings. They are not the 12th best team in this conference. They are going to finish in the top half, like everyone believed, even us. I still had them 7th. The Loyola Chicago Ramblers, as everyone has forgotten about them, are starting to play some good basketball right now. The second half of that Clemson game, they looked like a completely different team than what I saw when they played Tulsa and Boise State. Like it literally looked like they got rid of three quarters of their roster and just picked up new dudes. They still turn the ball over too much, but so much of the stupid things that they were doing in November are gone. They're so much more mature of a team. They now defend really hard without fouling. That was one of their biggest things. They were too aggressive early on. But these guys just attack opposing ball handlers. They're not getting burned. They're not committing fouls. This defense is starting to look like a Porter Moser into Drew Valentine Loyola defense again. And offensively, Braden Norris has gotten it going now. He's been great the last four games, 19, 11, 18, 19 points respectively. He's made at least two threes in each of their last six games. He's up to 35% on the season. I think he still ends way higher because remember, he was in the low 20s there for a while. And honestly, it's not that surprising that it took him a while. One thing that still sticks in my mind from when he came on our show this summer, and we asked him, do you expect to shoot more with a more inexperienced roster? And he said, no, he's going to let the game come to him. Well, unfortunately, this team isn't good enough for him to just let the game come to him. He had to be more aggressive, and he is being more aggressive now. He is playing like a star at this point. And Drew Valentine's figured out the rotation. We're going to look back in early November at some of those box scores and wonder why in the hell some of the guys that were playing 25, 30 minutes were. He's cracked the rotation now. He's figured out that Philip Alston is clearly his second best player. He's using him that way. Tom Welch is clearly his center. It's those two with a little bit of Bryce Golden behind them. Marquise Kennedy's finally healthy. And one of the quiet things, I don't know, once we get to the quarterfinals in March, if Ben Schwieger's going to be out there in crunch time. But I damn well know he's playing at least 20 minutes in that game because he's just really solid and he does not make the stupid mistakes that all of their other wings were making. I think their ceiling's still dependent on one of their really young, super talented wings, whether it's St. Thomas, Jalen Quinn, or Jaden Dawson. One of them has to go up a notch. But right now, with the five dudes that they got in that starting lineup, they are really, really solid at this point. And I think everyone has just forgotten about their existence.
Well, I don't think we should forget, at least for the moment, because that Clemson win, I mean, when you take into account the score, they won by 18. Is that the most impressive game an A-10 team has played, unless I'm forgetting something? I mean, maybe St. Louis beating Memphis, I guess, but that was much closer. Like, that's
As
pretty massive.
someone who only saw bits and pieces of St. Louis Memphis, the second half of what Loyola did against Clemson was a top three, if not number one, most impressive thing I've seen eye test wise this year. And they were up 12 at half, but they never let that get below six. They were just hounding them the whole time through. Like I could not believe that this was the same team that I saw lose by 22 to Boise in a game where they literally just could not stop fouling people.
Well, I think two of the keys that you already mentioned, but Marquise Kennedy coming back, he's been playing really well the last couple games, had 26 in the loss against DePaul, but then getting a lot of minutes in the Green Bay and Clemson games last week. And then I think the biggest key, Braden Norris, this week's A-10 Player of the Week. If he's back and playing at an all conference level, then that changes everything because he just wasn't playing well at the beginning of the season and he's been a much different shooter the last couple of games.
Yeah, 14 made threes in the last four games where they had two blowout wins in bye games. They crushed Clemson. They lost that overtime heartbreaker to DePaul. And that's been what's keyed their turnaround so far.
All right. Well, that was the palate cleanser, I think. Unless you have any other good things to say, should we wrap up this week's episode with the airing of a couple grievances?
Let's do it. We already went negative to start. I know it's not quite Festivus yet. Technically, we should be doing this with the Christmas gifts next week. But unless something just ridiculously bad happens this week, we're going to have a little bit more of a lighthearted episode next time around. So we'll fire out some grievances we want to air. I got like 20 of them. I really have three that I want to focus on. So I'll give a few quick rapid fires and then go into one of them. But just among them, Trey Clark and Day-Day Grant need to stop sitting at the same time. Duquesne's not getting enough shooting from everyone else. One of them needs to be out there at all times, or they have like no floor spacing at this point. Davidson needs to just start Des Watson. Like, he's their third best player. I get that Bailey and Coquera both have a higher ceiling on a game-to-game basis, but Watson's just so much steadier. And at some point, they're going to blow a game because those two just don't play well at the same time. And they just need more Des Watson. George Mason, just like their bench stinks again. It's not even a grievance, it's just starting to get annoying. I want to see more Devin Dinkins. Like, he does some random things on the court that are fun. Saquon Singleton attacks the boards. But other than that, like, it's been a bummer. St. Joe's, like, we get it, Billy Lang. You figured out that three means three is worth more than two. Cool. You don't need to keep showing us that. Yeah, those are basically all my small ones that I want to get off. One of my big ones, VCU, it's just starting to get annoying that Watkins and Nunn are just not scoring more. That's my biggest one there. Like, they basically can't survive against a decent team if Ace isn't playing. And when they play bad teams, they only beat them if Brandon Johns goes off. Like, this team has way too much good wing talent to just be constantly leaning on Brandon Johns to be their number two scorer. He's like a perfect number three, number four guy.
I feel like that's another grievance with VCU is that Ace just keeps getting hurt. And we didn't even expect it, but about an hour before game time, we found out he wasn't going to play against
Yeah, but
Howard.
that's
And
just part of how he plays. It's like John Morant.
man, we need him healthy in conference play, or else VCU is going to be so bad. And I will admit, I am guilty of
Whoa.
overhyping Jaden Nunn beyond belief. I still think he's a good player, but he's not Bones. And I see that now. But I don't have as many grievances. I have a couple, though, and I'll jump in first. Davidson and Richmond both made the tournament last year. Why are you guys playing home and homes against the CAA? Because one, you keep losing them. Davidson lost to Delaware. Richmond has losses to Charleston and William and Mary. Like, they're one of the worst teams in the country. Why are you going on the road there? But even worse, you're playing on Flo Hoops, so you're just screwing over your
Yeah.
fans. Nobody gets to watch the games. It's terrible. You went to the tournament. Play some better games in the non-conference.
I mean, Richmond did go play another good mid-major in a home and home and got absolutely eviscerated by Toledo, so.
But at least that was on the plus. I mean, the MAC, that's different. Don't play the CAA, though. We should
Yeah, no,
boycott
that's the
them.
thing. No one should ever play a CAA team in their own gym.
It's a
It's
terrible
just bad
idea.
for everyone in college basketball. Screw the CAA. This is the same conference that kicked out one of their own members from their conference tournament because they were leaving for realignment.
Also, for rights, or sorry, for Davidson, they played at Wright State. And I know, like, a
That was
small.
just funny. That had to be a scheduling quirk because Davidson was really struggling to fill their schedule.
Well, no, I'm just talking about, and I think Ghosty, who I'm sure is listening, he's the one Dayton fan that wants to play Wright State. But after seeing that ESPN Plus feed, I mean, that might as well have been on Flo because the sound was about 15 seconds behind. And I know it was weeks ago, but we had the announcer hawking loogies the entire night. Just
That
that
would
was.
have been an incredible grievance to air there because that was like three notches worse than a normal LaSalle broadcast, and we didn't even get the entertainment of having Kill Beers with it.
That was a disaster. I know that was at the beginning of the
It was
season,
the
but
single worst ESPN Plus broadcast I've ever witnessed, and I sat through the Dayton LaSalle game that had no
oh,
audio for 12 minutes, and then we didn't see the final
I've
play.
watched a lot of LaSalle games, and yeah, that was the worst one. So, yeah, there's another grievance that I'm reminded of. But where do you want to go
All
next?
right, number two, I'll keep it in the Gem City. Daron Holmes, you know how they have the expected goals scored for big time soccer matches, where like the analytics tells us how many goals Morocco should have scored against Portugal compared to what they actually had. I need the expected points scored for every time Daron Holmes gets fouled shooting, because 2 to 3 times a game, he gets hacked. And what looks like it should be an and one just kind of kicks off the rim. And then to make matters worse, and to double down on the fact that those and ones aren't going in, he heads to the foul line where he is shooting a magnificent 63.5%. And this is actually, to me, what's holding him back from being an NBA draft pick this year right now. It's those two things. He needs to be a better foul shooter to give these teams confidence that he can develop some sort of a jumper. And he needs just that one other little kick of strength so that one of these and ones that rolls out becomes just a dunk over a guy or something that he can at least turn into like a power floater. By the way, on the optimistic side, this is what I'm going to start watching for with him late December, early January. If he starts converting more of these and ones, I start believing he could win player of the year again. But right now, he misses like four of these every game.
I think that problem is twofold because one, like he has gotten a little bit weaker around the rim this year. His 2-point shooting percentage has gone from 66 to 55. So, pretty big drop off when you're taking all your shots under the basket. But then also, he gets fouled as much as anybody in the A-10, almost as much as anyone in the country. Right now, he's top
Seven and a
30.
half foul shots a game.
Yeah, and he's missing about three per game right now. So, that just. That weakness is magnified when you're taking so many free throws. And he's still having a good season. He was excellent against UNC Asheville with 27 points and 12 rebounds, but
Nine
still.
rebounds in 10 minutes to start that game.
Yeah, he had a really quick double-double that game, but yeah, hasn't quite been at that player of the year level that we both predicted. I just had another quick broadcast grievance, but St. Bonaventure and UMass playing in a nice little doubleheader over the weekend. I believe at the Barclays Center, but
Yep.
I didn't get to watch it because it was on the YES Network. Why are we playing on the Yankees channel? It's not even on the Plus. Those would have been two pretty decent games, and I'm guessing if you don't live in the New York area, you miss them.
I was fully prepared to watch the UMass game. I had that budgeted out as part of my football Sunday to go home and watch that game. To the point that had they gone 2-0 this week, I think we actually lead the pod with UMass. Like, I think this is a completely different episode because it would have been disrespectful for us to leave them off if they were still at one loss. But yeah, that was just ridiculous. Like, I actually thought that YES had had games on the Plus before, but apparently not. Apparently,
Yeah.
I guess a bunch of Yankees fans care about Iona basketball.
I feel like back in the day, Fordham, someone can correct me if there's a Fordham fan, but I feel like they used to play on SNY, which is the Mets channel. And I feel like that used to get streamed on
I
ESPN3
think
or
that I believe they still do.
they maybe they
I
do.
believe I watched a Fordham broadcast on SNY a few weeks ago.
Yeah, they might. But speaking of UMass too, another grievance. I mean, they did lose the flagship status, and maybe we should be referring to them as Amherst the rest of the year because the Riverhawks, led by former LaSalle Explorer Ayindi Hakeem and former St. Bonaventure Bonnie Abdul Karim Coulibaly, they both had nice games at the Mullen Center. So,
I do actually have two minor UMass grievances. Number one, you lost your own branch campus again. Like, really?
now that's their first time losing the. I
Oh,
think
sorry. UMass will beat someone else in the A-10 last year.
they beat Dayton and GW.
And then number two, it's actually my grievance against the A-10 Twitter. I love UMass Twitter, but guys, we get it. We get that you're not happy that Brandon Martin is starting for this team. Look, he's definitely out there for toughness, and I'm sure he is the tone setter in practice because I'm sure he knows that if he isn't the toughest worker out there, that his dad is kicking his ass. So, like, look, he's playing like 10 minutes a game. I think it's fine. The dude's tough as hell. He rebounds well. He doesn't play crunch time. It's not a big deal. He's clearly one of your 10 best players. Like, let it go.
Yeah, I think so. I have one more quick UMass grievance, and it's not really UMass, but it's such a bummer that Colorado just turned out to not be that good. A couple weeks ago, I said, I'm going to see what happens to the Buffaloes. Maybe they end up being a Q1 game. Maybe they will be, but they're 5-5. If they ended up being as good as they looked when they killed Texas A&M, that could have been the type of win that maybe we'd be talking about UMass as an at-large team, but
Colorado is the only team that beat Tennessee who got a number one overall vote in the AP poll today.
yeah, I mean, they still might be good, but they're 0-2 in a mid-major conference right now, so probably not going to be a great win at the end of the year.
All right, my very last one. This one is the entire reason I wanted to do the airing of the grievances. With a quick apology to Yuri Collins and Fred Thatch, St. Louis is not tough in the paint. Plain and simple. It's why they lost the Auburn game, and it's why they were never able to get any control of the Iona game. Like, we equate these Travis Ford teams with being physical, and I know this isn't a Hassan French squad. I know they're more offensively powered than defensively, like normal. But it just like I talked about with Holmes, they do not finish tough shots in the paint ever. Like, I've been bummed out by Francis Okoro this year. He looked like Hassan French light at the end of last season, and he's just not that. Like, I think if this team has French instead of him, they have at least two more wins. But that's one of the biggest reasons why their offense sputters out is they just can't get points in the paint if it's not Yuri Collins crashing into traffic. And this is why Fortis keep going to Thatch so early in some of these bad second halves, because he's the only tone setter they have down there.
While you were talking about that, I had to go look up and see what Jimmy Bell Jr. was doing at West Virginia, because I feel like St. Louis could use some of that size.
Great right now.
He's not playing a ton, but he's averaging over 5 points a game, shooting 65% from the field. And yeah, he would have brought some of that toughness.
That dude roughed up Obi Toppin for 40 minutes on a national TV game.
Yeah.
In the midst of his National Player of the Year season.
It's a tough matchup.
Really, really got physical with him.
Yeah. I mean, there's still hope for St. Louis, but they have gone away from that the last 2 years or so. They're not as physical a team as we were used to seeing back when we were getting into this a couple years ago. So I guess I can end with one more quick grievance, and this goes back to the overall theme of the episode. Why has the A-10 not been as good as it should be? What has happened to the league? And I think it goes back to the three preseason favorites that we all hyped up. To me, for St. Louis, Dayton, and VCU, these are teams that need to be at large quality at least 50% of the time. And at the end of the day, if you go back the last 5 years, I would say VCU is 2 for 5, so not bad. Dayton's 1 for 5, and St. Louis is 0 for 5. These teams all just kind of let us down again this year. And you know, this is assuming that nobody goes on a tear in conference play and wins 16, 17 games, but just overall, that's the biggest grievance of the season for me, is that the favorites didn't give us a whole lot to be excited about in the non-con.
Look, I'll say this again because I just don't know who's still listening at this point. But all three of these schools should be aiming to be St. Mary's. Everyone wants to be the Gonzaga of the East. Well, that's basically impossible. But St. Mary's has gone to the tournament 7 times since 2008. They went to the NIT 7 times. And the 15th of those 15 seasons, we had no postseason. Like, that's what these teams should reasonably. Like, Dayton has no reason to not be as good as St. Mary's. They should be able to make the NCAA tournament every other season, like you said. And that should be the baseline for all of these schools. Maybe not 14 out of 14 making the postseason, but 12 out of 14. And you should be making the tournament 6 or 7 of those. Like, the Gales have kind of set the gold standard for all of them, and they're not meeting that at all.
I will say this, though, as a final thought. We ripped on the A-10 today, deservedly so. It's been a disappointing non-con. But I want to make clear, that should not take away from how good the conference season is going to be and how wide open the league is. And look at this right now, without saying any team names, here are some of the KenPom rankings that are included in the Atlantic 10. 119, 124, 125, 127, 131, 132, 138. A couple of those are going to end up being double bye contenders. Maybe someone from that group wins the league. Anything could happen. And even though the entire non-conference outside of UMass winning and Myrtle Beach and St. Louis winning a couple of big games, overall it's been a huge bummer. But I'm just as excited for the conference season as any year we've been doing this. And I really do think with at-large resumes pretty much thrown in the trash can, that is going to mean that we're going to be all focused on the double bye race, who can cut down some regular season nets. And there's just going to be a lot of good games coming up. So stick with us, even though the tournament picture isn't great.
This is how I wanted to end. I'm already working. We're 2 episodes away from our conference preview. I'm already working on my power rankings. We need to come up with some sort of scoring system to get a poll going for this, because there should be nothing close to a consensus right now. I think St. Louis is a clear double bye team. I think St. Joe's is a clear pillow fighter. I have absolutely no idea of anything else right now. This is going to be completely nuts. A pillow fighter is going to win a day 2 game in the tournament and make it to the quarterfinals. if we do somehow get a team that is clearly going to make the tournament going in to Brooklyn, they are absolutely going to get slapped in the quarters or the semis, and we're getting a bid thief. Like, that's how this year is going to go. There's going to be a lot of good money to make if you can get in a good groove early gambling on this wild ass conference. It's going to be ridiculously entertaining. It's going to be wild. It's going to be just a more talented version of what the Missouri Valley's been the last few years. The Missouri Valley's completely insane every season.
Yeah, we get to join in on the fun. That's what happens when you get Loyola Chicago. You just turn into the Missouri Valley. But you know what? Let's just try to enjoy it.
All right, let's try to. And I hope you all enjoyed this episode. I appreciate anyone who stuck with us to this point. This was a lengthy one. But as always, if you enjoyed it, please give us 5 stars on iTunes. I got nothing else to say here. Send us any mailbag questions if you got them coming up before before the conference season. We'll be sure to jump on those if you do. And everyone enjoy this last Saturday before Christmas. As big of a bummer as this non-con season has been, there is a lot of great games that day. We're going to get at least one really satisfying win out of them.
To feel less numb.